Shikshadanda Beauty. The woman made a date to see him, and before, seeing if he took Fergadel. And the whole day and night she sent the fast stool, and she delivered that stool. Upon the next night, when the man came to see her, she appeared very ugly and emaciated. When the man inquired for him about the woman with whom he had an engagement, she replied, "I'm that very woman." The man refused to believe her, not knowing that she had lost all her beauty due to the vile purgative that caused her to fast the whole day and night. When the man began to argue with her, the woman said that she was not looking beautiful because she was separated from the ingredients of her beauty. The man asked her how she could be so separated. The woman said, "Come on and I will show you." And she showed him the pot filled with the liquid stool and vomit. Thus the man became aware that a beautiful woman is simply a lump of matter composed of blood, stool, urine, and simply other disgusting ingredients. This is the actual fact, but in a state of illusion, man becomes attracted by illusory beauty and becomes a victim of Maya. King Paranjana begged his wife to return to her original beauty. He tried to revive her, just as the living entity tries to revive his original consciousness, Krishna consciousness, which is very beautiful. All the beautiful features of the queen can be compared to the beautiful features of Krishna consciousness. When one returns to his original Krishna consciousness, the action becomes steady and his life becomes successful. Translation, King Paranjana said, "My dear beautiful wife, when a master accepts a servant as his own man and does not punish him for his offenses, the servant must be considered unfortunate. My dear slender maiden, when a man chastises a servant, the servant should accept this as great mercy. One who becomes angry must be very foolish not to know that such is the duty of his friend. My dear wife, your teeth are very beautifully set, and your attractive features make you appear very thoughtful. Kindly give up your anger, be merciful unto me, and please smile upon me with loving attachment. When I see a smile on your beautiful face, when I see your hair, which is as beautiful as the color blue, and see your raised nose, and hear your sweet talk, you'll become more beautiful to me, and thus attract me and oblige me. You are my most respected mistress." So, contrary to what he did before, when he left, now he appears very obedient to her, which on one level is good, because a person should obey the intelligence if it is good intelligence. On the other hand, if the man is completely obedient and overcome by a woman, that's also not good, in the material world at least. So here we see that he has become subservient to his wife. So it's a double meaning here. One is that, of course, it's good that he should be subservient to his intelligence. On the other hand, if a man is simply subservient to his wife, that is not a good position, because technically he has more intelligence than her, so therefore he loses his intelligence. So therefore it's said that Stri Sangha, or association with women, also means not just illicit activities with a woman, but being controlled by a wife. That is also considered to be a vita Stri Sangha, or illicit relationship with a woman. Anyway, here the allegory shows that a person should actually listen to the intelligence if he wants to conduct himself properly, and in this way he can avoid sinful activities. So in relation to that, here Paranjana says that this punishment that you're giving me is actually mercy upon me. It is a form of correction. Shiksha danda means punishment meant as teaching. So person is punished. If it's a correct punishment, of course, a just punishment, then it is done with a particular purpose of teaching a person that they shouldn't do a particular activity. So that is the correct application of punishment by the king or the government or by the master to the servant or the parents to the children. Now they punish them not out of cruelty, but out of compassion, to correct that person so they'll do proper activities. And the person who gets punished has to take the right attitude and understand that it is not that one should become hostile to the punisher, but rather we take this as great mercy in order to correct us and to become grateful for that person. So that is what Paramahansa says in this verse, that actually the master is very merciful when he punishes the servant. And if he doesn't do so, then he's not very merciful to the person. So the attitude of the person who is punished is the correct attitude. The Prabhupada has pointed out that if a person feels hostile for the one who punishes him, then he will never be corrected. So the same analogy is given here in the purport with the devotee. So the devotee suffers from karma, which is punishment, and he takes the karma as mercy of the Lord. Karma is ultimately instituted by the Lord, so therefore he accepts all this karma as just punishment, and it is the mercy of the Lord, in the same way that the child should take the punishment of the parents as their compassion upon to correct him. So in the same way, the devotee, though he may suffer in this world, he understands that the suffering is due to karma, and the karma is simply an instrument of the Lord to teach him, to correct himself. So that is the proper attitude of the devotee. Of course, the devotee is very special. Not only he has this attitude, but simultaneously he offers respects to the Supreme Lord with body, mind, and words, which means he continues his devotional service. He does not interrupt his process of bhakti. Now another person may simply understand his karma and accept it, but he may not do devotional service. The devotee understands the nature of karma, accepts it as mercy of the Lord, and he also forms bhakti and does not interrupt that bhakti in spite of his suffering in the material world and his karmas. Such a person, therefore, gains the mercy of the Lord. This is the statement in this verse of Bhagavatam. Brahma makes this statement after he was bewildered. So this person who acts in this way becomes the rightful recipient of the Lord's mercy. So the devotee, the lesson to learn from this is the devotee continues devotional service in any circumstance. And all the interruptions caused in the material world due to karmas or whatever, he simply takes that as mercy of the Lord and does not feel hostile to the Lord for causing these problems. So all circumstances in the material world, he becomes indifferent to them and doesn't take them one way or the other. Another verse says that the devotee considers heaven or hell to be equal. He doesn't, if he's in a hellish position, that is suffering, he does not really mind that. And if he's in a heavenly position of enjoyment, he does not mind that either. He doesn't care for either of them. But he serves the Lord. That is his main activity, his attitude. This is the an attitude which will develop in the process of bhakti as a person develops his devotional service. The stronger it becomes in devotional service, the more this will manifest. Simultaneously, of course, the process of bhakti is such that it destroys karmas. So we should expect that as a devotee advances, he doesn't suffer in the material world. That's also to be expected. On the other hand, we also see that sometimes devotees have great obstacles, like Prahlad. How can he have all these obstacles if all karmas are destroyed? So sometimes we can say the arrangements are made by the Supreme Lord for certain purposes. Of course, the Nityasiddha devotees, they have no karma anyway. So sometimes these are arrangements of the Lord simply to instruct others. And it's understanding of the Supreme Lord that these things are not a botheration for the devotee. So in the case of Prahlad, he didn't mind all these different things. He simply remembered the Lord. And they tried to poison him and throw him in fire and throw him off a cliff, etc. He wasn't really disturbed by any of these things. So that showed that Prahlad was fixed in his devotional service. So that's the case of a very advanced devotee. In the case of other devotees, the Lord may also show karmas. Even though technically karmas are all destroyed, the Lord may keep a trace of karmas there, just to show that everybody must go through karmas. So that is his claim by Mahadevi Yagusa. He says that, yes, bhakti destroys all karmas, and technically the devotee is free of karmas, but there may be a pattern of karma that remains even for a devotee that looks like karma. But actually it's not the same as the karma for a regular person. So we see that also in the case of Ajamil. His karmas were all destroyed when he chanted accidentally the name of Narayana. But it looked like he still had karmas. So that also was not real karma. That was only a pattern kept by the Lord. So in the case of devotees, that may also be that there may be a pattern that looks like karma, but it's under the control of the Supreme Lord, so it's not actually the same thing. So in this way, in any case, the devotee, when he meets these looks like obstacles, then he considers it mercy of the Lord. And even if it's not karma, he will simply think it's the mercy of the Supreme Lord, whatever it is. And he will not in any way become hostile to the Lord because of these different situations. Rather, he accepts them and is not overly affected by them, and continues his devotional service. So the important point here is that he continues devotional service with no hostility towards the Lord, and he tolerates all the situations in the material world. And with that proper attitude, then the Lord becomes very merciful to him, and he quickly delivers him from the material world and puts him in the spiritual world. So that is how the devotees approach the punishment due to karma. The opposite is a person who has no faith. If he gets these punishments, he'll become hostile. And instead of having faith in the Lord, he will lose his faith. If he had any little bit of what was called faith, or that wasn't real faith, then he will simply become hostile to the Supreme Lord. And he'll blame him for this. He's not God because he's not protecting me, or whatever. So this is the attitude of one who has no real faith, or is an atheist, or whatever. So this is a common argument given in the material world. There is no God because we see all the miseries in the material world, so therefore we cannot believe in God. It's a very, very common argument given. On the other hand, then we'll find people that see the same things in the material world, same miseries, etc. But they have that belief. So that it's not a real excuse for not believing in God. It's simply an attitude they have due to a prior conviction that God does not exist. So they simply do that as an excuse. So the devotee, in the face of all these obstacles, he simply accepts that somehow it is the arrangement of the Lord. He may not understand how it has happened, why it has happened, but he understands that somehow the Lord has his own plan. And he simply continues his devotional service with detachment from his material body.
And we see another case where one follows one particular path, but his desires are not fulfilled, and he suffers, then he changes his path, and then, like, somebody converts from Christianity or to whatever. Because they are suffering and their desires may not be fulfilled. And then what can we say? I mean, because they're still trying to figure out where to place themselves.
It's a similar thing. Of course, it may be a little better because they have faith in something and they don't become an atheist. So they may try to change faith for another process, for another process, for another process. So they seem to have some initial faith with lack of faith in the process itself. That is a little superior to having no faith at all.
The spirit also said that Lord favors a devotee. He takes away what he likes, so he gives him very good. initiate the judgment.
Yeah, that may take place in some cases where the Supreme Lord understands that a certain condition is unfavorable for the devotee of material wealth or whatever, then you may take that away. In some cases, you may not do that. You may give, as he gave to Dhruva. So it's not an inevitable rule that the Lord makes everybody poor. So we see all the kings, they were rulers of the world, so, and they were devotees. Many of the great kings were very wealthy. So it's not an inevitable rule, but where it's unfavorable for bhakti, it is considered the Lord's mercy if he takes that away and makes their condition favorable for bhakti. That is considered mercy also.
Those are the different levels of devotee. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that devotee takes his such a positive attitude. So this devotee is like this movie in the Uttamadikari state. You feel devotee may not have it.
Well, not necessarily Uttamadikari. No, Madhyamadikaris would also do this. Conditioners may not. They may not have strong faith. If they have Komala strung up, they may not. But even then, even if they are swayed away one way or the other, those persons with that, even with Komala strung, eventually they will return to the process. Those who maybe got very, very little faith, those are the ones who will maybe disappear or whatever if they don't get good material benefits from their actions or whatever. But of course, the whole point of pure bhakti is that one does not aspire for material benefits. So to expect that in itself means that the bhakti is rather mixed. It's not real bhakti. They're having all these other expectations that they're bhakti. So in that case, if it's not real pure bhakti, and it's never a weak bhakti also, so they can definitely waver. But, as Krishna says, there are four types of people who surrender unto me, and I accept them all. So even the mixed bhaktas, the Lord also accepts them, and he may respond to them and give them things to increase their faith. So it's not inevitable that the Lord will take everything away.
Also, in Kunti's praying to the Lord, they give me more problems. How do I understand
that? Yeah, that of course, so because when one is in a distressful situation, one remembers the Lord. So that's the idea there. In distress, one calls out to the Supreme Lord. So that if we're in more distress, we'll call out to the Lord more. That's the reasoning there.
Yesterday, you said that people take decisions based on two things. One is their past experience, second is the scriptural knowledge. But scriptural knowledge comes much later actually. In case of somebody who comes in touch with ISKCON, scriptural knowledge may come later, but it's the experience which one has with the
Well, there's several things. One of course is experience, by which we get intelligence. Another is the intelligence coming from scripture. So the only way we do that is we have faith. But the faith, of course, we can say comes from experience also in the sense that we get Agata Sukritis to develop faith. So in one sense, it's based on experience also, of some sort.
So
if
somebody comes, then devotee should be very careful in terms of how they behave towards the new person. Because what experience he has with the devotees is what he'd...
Yeah. So the devotee must understand that different people are at different levels, so we have to handle them differently according to if they have faith or no faith or whatever. If they have no faith, then we simply give them a shot or something. If they have a little faith, then we can preach to them something or other.
And
Vidhi
Chali
Chakra
and the punishment is supposed to be considered as a
Well, if it's a just punishment, even then, if the government, in other words, the government has laws and the person's a murderer, then he is punished for that. So it's the same now as it is since then. Now, the only problem is that the system is not foolproof, that's all. And subject to corruption. modern ancient, even ancient times it would be also so. The application of the system may be faulty, but the principle is correct.
Okay, we see that the person has a good karma and he has a lawyer to base him over with their problems and then he comes out. But nowadays we find you made a big mistake. You're not punished.
Yeah, well, so as I said, the problem is there are the application may have problems. The rich man gets a good lawyer, so therefore he gets less punishment, and the person who's less wealthy doesn't have a good lawyer, so he gets more punishment for the same crime. So that's the wrong application.
Thank you.